Well, we've got to get Guy Harrison's take on intelligent design when we come back. Plus, we'll take your phone calls in just a moment. And welcome back. Guy Harrison with us. Guy, there is wonderment in the universe. You look up there at the heavens, you figure, okay, somebody had to put this together or something, but you say maybe not.
Yeah, maybe not. It's not proven. And simply because we can't explain every last detail and aspect of the universe or our own bodies is not in itself evidence of anything. It's just ignorance. And I hope one day we fill in those gaps and we answer all those questions. But for right now, to simply say, you know, the concept of irreducible complexity, to look at a cell and say, you know, we just can't figure out how all this came together and how it happened, and we just don't have the answers. Therefore, it must have been a god or gods or some advanced alien species that created us. I mean, that's jumping to an extraordinary conclusion that's just not warranted. You know, it doesn't mean it's not true, doesn't disprove it. I totally admit that. But it's just not a valid conclusion based on ignorance. It's anti-science. A lot of people say intelligent design is science. It's not. It's anti-science. It's giving up. It's saying it's too complex. We don't know the answer. Therefore, it's magic. You know, and that's wrong. That's not a good way to, you know, think.
Well, yeah, but there's so much order in the universe. I mean, it just beats to a drumbeat that is absolutely perfect in rhythm. How could that just happen?
Well,
first
of all, that, you know,
did I get you?
Well, no, because it's subjective. I mean, yeah, the universe is beautiful, except it's also really ugly. The universe is a wonderful environment, a wonderful home for us, except that it kills us really easily in many different ways in many places. You know, I mean, the Earth, you know.
I bet you're a party pooper.
No, not at all. No, I told you. I thought we got past that, George. I told you. I'm a happy.
No, I'm a Gemini. Geminis hold these things. We don't let go. You know that.
No, but the Earth, for example. I've heard many people around the world, in many different religions, by the way. It's not just a Christian thing or anything. I've heard Hindus tell me, Muslims tell me that the world is perfect and beautiful, and this is clear evidence of their God, not the other guy's God, but it's always their God. And I say, but it's not. You know, hurricanes, earthquakes, bacteria, viruses. There's all kind of things that are less than perfect from our point of view. You know, and all of nature on this planet, pretty much all of it, is based on killing other things, eating things alive. I mean, there's parasites right now that are gorging on some squirming, you know, pathetic creature that's feeling pain. I mean, it's all subjective. Yeah, there's beauty and order to the universe. There's also horrible ugliness and disorder in the universe. So it depends on what you're pointing at. And neither one proves or disproves the question of gods.
To the phones we go. Jeff in Louisville, Kentucky. I trust all is well with you out there, Jeff, huh? Rough weather.
Yeah, really bad up there in southern Indiana. Yeah. Need a lot of prayers for those people up
sure
there.
Thing.
There's has some real storms come through there today. But I wanted to ask Guy if he could distinguish between when he knows something or when he wants to believe something or when he hopes for something. He had stated earlier that he didn't believe in an afterlife, and that most people that did just were wanting or hoping that there was one there. And I'm saying, I've never been to the South Pole, and I've never been to the afterlife, of course, but how would, I take it that Guy's never been to the South Pole either, but how does he, would he distinguish the South Pole as a place that he would want to go to, that he wants to believe is there, or that he hopes is there,
or thinks
is
there? Okay,
yeah.
Go ahead.
That's a great question. I like that. First of all, the existence of the South Pole is not the same as the existence of heaven, for example, or any kind of afterlife. I mean, one of those claims is extraordinary and therefore requires extraordinary evidence, in my opinion. The existence of the bottom of the world, so to speak, the South Pole, is not really that extraordinary. I mean, it's pretty easy to believe that. So I'm willing to believe.
I mean, we're told it's there, so we have to assume it is, right?
Yeah, and I've seen lots of photographs. I mean, I've actually met somebody who's been there, or not to the actual South Pole, but been to Antarctica. So I'm pretty sure it's there. But here's the thing, and that I love that question by the caller. Yeah, there are things I feel like I know. I think I know this. It's really true. It's real. But you know what? It's all tentative. It's all contingent upon, you know, things changing. Things can change. New evidence can come along. And the way science works is the way I sort of try to work in my own daily life. I believe things that I think are rock solid true until I know better, and then I'll let them go. Okay. Now, that's not the same as loyalty to a friend or my parents or something like that. That's different. I'm talking about facts and knowledge about the world and things like that. If there's some, like, say, evolution, for example, I accept that life evolves on this planet. I've seen so much evidence for it. It makes sense to me. I'm sure it's true. But guess what? If some scientist comes along tomorrow and presents a mountain of evidence that completely blows Charles Darwin out of the water, and it's just, I mean, the scientific community takes note, they attack it, and they can't do anything with it, and they have to accept, wow, we have to reverse field here. Life does not evolve. Well, guess what? I'm not going to stubbornly keep believing in evolution just because I don't want to change. I will change as the evidence demands. So, and I don't view that as a weakness. Some people think that's a weakness. They say, well, science is always changing. You know, today this is this way, tomorrow this way, and scientists used to think the Earth did this, and now they know better. Well, that's a good thing. Science, that's why science is so great, because it changes as more information becomes available. And that's how I try to live my life. I change my views as more information comes available. So if tomorrow somebody presented me with really powerful, compelling evidence for the existence of the underworld, Hades, or heaven, or something like that, then I would really have to consider it and maybe even believe in it.
You know, millions of people have reported that they've been abducted in alien abduction cases. Strange situation. Who knows what's happening to them, but what's your take?
Yeah, I have a chapter on that.
Yes, you do.
Yeah, alien abductions fascinate me because many, many people have claimed to have these. They claim to have had these experiences, and millions of people believe in it. They think it's really going on. So what is the deal? Now, maybe it's true. Maybe extraterrestrials are visiting the Earth and they're creeping into people's bedroom windows and doing weird things to them at night. Could be. But here is a more likely explanation, okay? It's an alternative explanation. There's something called sleep paralysis. And as I researched this, I was pretty amazed that up to 20% of the public has regular sleep paralysis episodes.
Or they're frozen. They can't move.
Yeah, exactly, because our brains, as we sleep, when we get into deep sleep, our brains will sort of paralyze our bodies so that we don't flail around and kick our cat or whatever at night while we're sleeping, okay? And what happens with some people is their brain will start to wake up, and they can actually begin to think and hear and maybe even see. But yet the part of the brain that's keeping their body locked down is still keeping it locked down. So you feel like you are absolutely just immobilized, and you can say, okay, I want to lift my arm, I want to get out of bed, and you can't. And what shocked me is as I talked to people and started asking around about this, I was stunned because I had friends that had experienced this. I had a family member that experienced it. I never knew, you know, and this is much more common than I ever imagined. And one woman told me that she has them all the time, and she says that she's never had like an alien abduction type, you know, experience because of it. But she said that there have been times when a TV was on in the living room and she could hear it from the bedroom while she was paralyzed, and it freaked her out for like 5 or 10 minutes, or she doesn't even know how long. And then she realized it was a TV and she just kind of relaxed and then woke up fully. But she says it's absolutely easy for her to imagine somebody having a really bizarre, like mixing a dream or mixing in a dream with that experience, or mixing in some sort of external input from the environment with that state that would just freak you out and leave you with the feeling that you have been, you know, molested, abducted. And remember, these kind of stories have been going on all throughout history, but we used to call them witches or goblins and all kind of things that would come in, you know, and get us in our sleep. So, you know, now we call them aliens. Maybe in the past we were calling them other things, but it could be just a fairly common human experience. Now, that doesn't, you know, that's not I wouldn't call that, therefore, we have disproved alien abductions. No, it doesn't. But it, like I said, it's a more likely, more reasonable alternative explanation, in my view.
Let's go to our first-time caller, Mike, driving in Oregon. Mike, thanks for calling. Go ahead.
Yes, George, I just want to say how refreshing and wonderful it is to have your guest on, a skeptic, and he should have his own show at least once a week and be on and explain things so normally and just make sense.
We'd call it the Skeptic Show. Go ahead.
Sign me up. I'll do it.
If he had his own show, I would listen into that too. My question is, I wanted to get his take, and I have a belief that religion is one of the main problems with the human condition, is the belief in the supernatural. We had 500 years in the Dark Ages that stopped science, basically. And so man is really behind 500 years of scientific knowledge. I'd just like to get his take on that.
Okay, great. Thanks, Mike. Go ahead.
Thank you.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I don't want to just pick on religion, but yeah, religion's been a source of it's been a big drag on progress. There's no denying that, and not picking on any one specific religion, just sort of all of them. If you lump them all together, they have been a drag on progress. That doesn't mean everything that's come out of religion has been bad. Obviously, many great, wonderful things have come out of religion. So, you know, and I'm fair and even-handed about that. But and it's also not just religion. I mean, there's all sorts of sloppy thinking, you know, superstitious thinking, whatever you want to call it, that is part separate from religion, that has really harmed our progress. We could be 2,000 or 3,000 years beyond where we are now. We could be beyond the solar system, colonizing, you know, half the galaxy by now, probably, if we'd really got our act together, say 2,000 years ago, and just really got the ball rolling full speed, and maybe didn't have so many wars and stuff like that, weren't quite so tribal and so fearful of each other. I mean, there's so much potential in our species. I mean, it really is. If we ever get our act together and we stop stumbling around in the dark and worrying about things that may not even be true or not even likely to be true, and if we stop mistrusting and fearing each other and trying to screw each other over every time we get a chance, we could do so much. It's just amazing. You know, but a final point on that is that science, as wonderful as it is, it's just a tool, and we have to be careful. I've even got a chapter about that in my book, about science being too overly respected and admired, and scientists being given too much respect and admiration, because some people go too far and they think anything a scientist says is just true and wonderful and we should trust him. Well, no, they're wrong too. They're humans. They're fallible. And science, like I said, is a tool. It can be used for great things. It can be used for horrible things. Okay. So science, you know, took us to the moon, but it also taught us how to make napalm, you know, which we could drop on our fellow humans, you know. So it can be used for all manner of things, good and bad. We have to be responsible about how we use this magnificent tool that we have called science.
Next up, let's go to Jeff in Pocatello, Idaho. Hey, Jeff, thanks for calling.
Hi, Guy. I appreciate your healthy skepticism.
Thanks.
And I wanted to see if you could see the straight lines in the sky without reading in between them. And I'd also like to suggest diesel exhaust fluid be discussed as a possible cause of some of these things.
Of the chemtrails. Chemtrails. What do you think of chemtrails, Guy?
Yeah, I don't know much about it. I mean, to be honest, I'm kind of a guy who I don't like pollution of any kind going into my lungs. So I don't, you know, I would like to know more about it. But I don't have any, you know, reason at this point to be really concerned and think that. So, I think he's referring to something that's intentional going on. Is that what he means? Like we're being,
yes, we're being sprayed, babe.
Right.
Maybe. Yep.
Right. The thing is, see,
something.
Now that's the kind of thing a lot of skeptics might say, "Oh, nonsense." But guess what? It's actually documented, confirmed. It did happen. I think it was around the 40s or 50s in the UK, where certain areas of England were sprayed by the government with certain chemicals just to test and see what happened.
They did that over St. Louis, too.
Yeah, that's true. It's been done places in the U.S. I didn't know St. Louis.
Yeah.
But so, you know, it's not crazy. I mean, governments have done terrible things to people, so who knows? I mean, who knows? But the thing is, once again, just because something's possible, just because it's happened before, we can't pretend to know it's true. But that doesn't mean we shouldn't be, you know, have our guard up and investigate things when we think there's something creepy going on.
Of the 50 popular beliefs that people think are true, was there one that even you thought maybe it is or could be?
Yeah, there's one. The last chapter, The End Is Near, where I talk about all these end of the world, you know, fears
prophecies
and fears of our extinction. And I talk about how these prophecies and predictions have been wrong over and over and over and over and over throughout history. Anytime they set a firm date, they're always wrong. They're always wrong. But then I say, well, you know what? Okay, let's be fair about this. And I talk about from my point of view, the more realistic possibilities for our extinction, or at least our, you know, us having a really bad day here on Earth. And it's things like, you know, an asteroid strike or a pandemic with a really, really bad virus that just, you know, we can't handle. And I go through several scenarios, including even things like, you know, nanotechnology running amok and turning the world into gray goo and all kind of stuff, nuclear war. I present all these scenarios as possible, you know, very reasonable things that really could happen to us. They don't require any magical thinking or anything like that. But even then, I provide a little bit of optimism and think, you know what, civilization might collapse and most of us might die. But I think we're such an intelligent, resilient, creative, tough species, and we're spread so far around the world that there's a really good chance that we could survive just about anything. I mean, just about anything. Not anything, but almost anything. Because even say a horrible virus sweeps across the planet, right?
And it could one day.
Oh, yeah. And in fact, it probably will, to be honest. I mean, given the way viruses evolve so fast and our air travel and all, we probably will be hit really hard with something eventually. Now, if it kills, you know, billions, I don't know. That's going to take a lot. But even if it did kill billions, hit every city, just decimated, you know, the human species, I still think we'd survive, because there are little pockets of tribes living on islands in the Indian Ocean that are completely cut off from the rest of civilization, and they would probably survive because, you know, their isolation would be their protection. And it only takes, say, 1,000 humans to keep our species going. In fact, there was a time, about 70,000 years ago, there was a supervolcanic eruption, and it whacked human numbers down to maybe 2,000, 3,000, the whole planet. And yet those people, those prehistoric people, were smart enough, tough enough, creative enough to find a way to survive, even though the planet cooled and was, you know, murky and dark and smoky. Plants were affected, animals were affected. They still hung on and survived. And if they could do it, I think we could do it under most scenarios.
Gaia, do you have a website available, and where do people get your book, 50 Popular Beliefs?
Yeah, my website is guypharrison.com. And 50 Popular Beliefs That People Think Are True is available on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, bookstores, everywhere. And like I said, it's a skeptical book, but it's really positive. And I think both believers and skeptics will get a lot out of it, because I tried to make it a fun read. I love these topics. I love thinking about
them. Oh, they're great topics.
Oh, yeah, I love thinking about this stuff. And I try to show that, you know, this stuff is worth thinking about. And I try to show how exciting science is and how wonderful the universe is, with all the mystery and stuff we still have left to explore and figure out and discover. So it's a lot of fun.
All right, we're going to come back and take final phone calls with you, Guy, and of course the foreword to his book, done by the bad astronomer, that's what he calls himself, Dr. Philip Plait. Well, next hour we'll have open lines for you right here on Coast to Coast AM. Oh, you could tell Guy Harrison, it's a political year, isn't it? They're everywhere. What do you think of government? You talk about being a skeptic. What about government?
We need them, but you should never trust them. None of them. Just keep your eyes open, keep your hands in your wallet, and look out.
We agree on something.
Yeah, politicians, man.
I wanted to ask you about things that, you know, could be real. We haven't proven it, like Atlantis. You know, it's conceivable, I think, that there was a city, an island, a landmass that went down. Could you accept that?
Oh, it has happened. I mean, there are.
Oh, we know that. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, not Atlantis.
No, but it could be Atlantis. We just don't know where it was.
Yeah. There are cities in the Mediterranean that have been swamped by tsunamis, or, you know, destroyed by earthquakes and slid into the sea. That has happened. It's completely possible. Not just possible. It's a fact. Now, as far as Atlantis, all we've got really is, you know, mention of it and some dialogues by Plato. That's really it. And the problem is, so much now is attached to Atlantis. You know, they're aliens. They had superpowers. Some say they had nuclear weapons, you know, thousands of years ago. All this stuff is just been tacked on along the way, and there's no evidence for any of it. You know, it's just a story, a great story. So although several times a year we hear about Atlantis being discovered, or it's about to be discovered, but it's never quite found. And so one day we might find something that's really impressive, an underwater city that, you know, it seems like maybe ancient Greece, looks like Athens or something. Yeah, something like that could happen. But I don't think we're going to find nuclear warheads in their, you know, warehouse, or we're going to find alien skeletons, you know, among the ruins. I mean, I doubt that very seriously.
All right, let's go to the phones again. We'll pick it up by going to Milton, Florida. Kenny's with us, east of the Rockies. Good morning, Kenny.
Hey, George. Some good topics tonight. Long-time listener all the way back to Art Bell.
Thank you, Kenny.
First of all, I wanted to, we need to remember that conspiracy is not a theory. It's a crime. And I wanted to give two quick points on 9/11. Building 7 is one of the smoking guns. Two quick ones, if I could, George. If you look at the Pentagon, some of the pictures in the video, it looks like a high-powered rifle bullet went through three tiers of reinforced concrete. That's a smoking gun to me. Yeah. The other smoking gun is you can't take a 100-story building with a solid steel core and turn it into powder in less than 9 seconds. And they also said that the temperature in the core 5 days after putting water on it was 1,500 degrees. And I'll listen off air, and God bless you.
All right. Your thoughts on that, Guy?
Well, I'm not an engineer, so I don't want to pretend to be one. You know, so those kind of questions, I sort of defer to experts. And the fact is, at this time, most engineers, most experts say that it probably was planes, as were given as described by the official explanation. So, sure, I'm all for investigating this stuff and getting to the bottom of it. And, you know, like he said, you know, conspiracies are crimes. I mean, these things happen. They happen all the time. And remember, 9/11 was a conspiracy, according to the popular version. I mean, but most people think it was a conspiracy of Islamic terrorists and not George Bush and Dick Cheney or whomever. So, yeah, I mean, look into these things, think about them. I'm all for that, yeah.
All right, next up, let's go to Windsor, Canada. Linda's with us. Hey, Linda, thanks for calling.
Hi, George. First of all, I loved your Elvis rendition.
Oh, thanks.
But I tell you, you have the voice to sing the Star Spangled Banner.
No, I don't want to do that. Too many people forget the words. I don't want to do that.
Well, you're great.
Thank you.
Your guest, Guy, I wanted to say, I know there's life after death. Not only from my mother when she passed away, but most of all from my sister. And when she did, I was in the grieving room, and just out of nothing, I guess nowhere, I got this impression, go to her room. The minute I stepped into her room, which her three daughters were there, she had just passed away. And this huge wave hit all of us, and my niece just, she just voiced out like, oh, my God, like it was just overwhelming. And I started to cry, and in my ear, a distinct, you know, presence of a voice said, I'm okay. Now, it didn't stop there. It wasn't till later when we didn't know my father was going to pass away, and it was about 3 weeks before he passed. I was thinking of my sister and some things. I felt a presence, and a message was sent to me. And I was to tell her daughters. Now, I was thinking, am I imagining this or what? Anyway, when my dad passed away, we're all at the hospital, and I pulled my nieces aside, and I said, look, I have something to tell you. It's from your mother. When I told them, they were aghast. They just said, oh, my God, nobody knew, you know, knows about this. And it was just shocking. And when my father was, you know, we were outside the hospital, I felt the presence, not feeling or I mean thinking, but I felt his presence, and I said, he's here with us now. And my dad was quite a skeptic. I always said, Dad, if you can hit the other side, let me know. And he always said, if I can, I will. But I'm convinced now from my sister that she was allowed to give me that message, and I know there is life. Like, nothing could ever change my mind.
Okay, very good. And, you know, that's one thing, Guy. It will be difficult for anyone, skeptics or otherwise, to change other people's minds.
Yeah, well, somebody like that caller, I wouldn't necessarily, you know, try to debate her or intentionally change her mind. All I would do is point out in a general sense that, you know, with absolute respect to these sort of stories, but to show that, you know, they're very common. People have had them throughout history in every culture and in all sorts of different contexts. And people have felt the presence of demons and angels and spirits and other religions that we now today just dismiss as obviously not true. You know, the ancient Greeks felt the presence of gods and harpies and spirits that visited them and stuff. Today, not many people take that seriously, but, you know, we can't dismiss their feelings, their claims. Those are intelligent, normal people. They're animists. There's about 400 million animists in the world who believe that spirits inhabit trees, birds, rocks, all kinds of stuff, and they have spiritual experiences, and they describe them as being very powerful and knowing with absolute certainty that they have encountered a spirit in the form of a tree or something like that. Now, I'm not saying they're lying. They probably did experience something. But the fact that this happens so much in every culture throughout time seems to suggest that it's something that we all share as humans, something about our psychology that makes these things happen.
What story have you heard that, in your opinion, is probably one of the most preposterous, Guy?
Oh, my gosh. Do I have another hour? I have to go through the list. Okay, a conspiracy theory that I heard that there, you might have heard this one, you're such an expert on this stuff. There was, that there's a gigantic city under the earth somewhere that's inhabited by people who are actually running the world. And they control, and there's maybe, I don't know, I think 500,000 people that live in this underground city that's highly advanced, it's deep within the earth. And these people actually control what's going on up here by controlling all the politicians. And the example I was given is that every congressperson, every governor, and every president in America is either a homosexual or a pedophile. And these people have files and photos, and so they're all blackmailed, and that's how they're controlled, so that they pass whatever legislation they desire, these people that live underground. I mean, it's that one. That one got my attention. That was pretty extreme, I thought.
Well, see, what I could accept, though, the fact that there are a group of globalists who want a one-world government, who do control and would love to manipulate the puppets while they're being the puppet masters. I mean, that's probably pretty real. Not the underground part, but a group of people out there who have so much wealth, Guy, that their boredom is to control.
Yeah, you know, it's a funny thing. As you were saying that, I was thinking, okay, crazy conspiracy theory? No, not at all. Do I think that there are wealthy, ambitious, greedy psychopaths out there with billions of dollars who maybe have fantasies about teaming up with a couple of their golf buddies and figuring out a way to corner the market on oil and
everything silver, else?
Yeah.
Name.
Yeah, sure. Sure. I mean, what, you know, what was Adolf Hitler? You know, he had pretty grand visions and stuff, and he was real. I mean, so it's not far-fetched to think that. Now, but the thing is, do I think there's actually some bizarre boardroom where, you know, 12 old guys have a secret handshake and they sit around a round table and they, you know, say a magic spell, and then they control the planet? No, I don't think that's really going on, but...
It's called the Bilderberg Group.
Okay.
Could be. Or Bohemian Grove.
Yeah. But you know, it's how you look at it. Yeah, do I think powerful people come together and want to do stuff that is often evil? Sure. Happens all the time. Happening right now, I have no doubt.
All right, next up, let's go to Eric in Gainesville, Florida, Skype line. Hey, Eric, thanks for calling.
Hey, George, love you.
Thank you.
Thanks for all your effort and your service. And, Guy, a pleasure to talk with you. I love your voice of reason. you know, when you sound sarcastic, you almost make more sense, it sounds like, the last few minutes here. But I was wondering what you thought about karma and vegetarianism in particularly.
Interesting. Karma. karma. Do I think that there's some sort of magical, supernatural scorekeeping that's going on? No, I don't think so. I don't see any evidence of that. But it depends on how you interpret it, how you view it. Do I think, because I sort of live my life in a way like that. I treat people well as I can. I hold doors open for people. I smile at people on the street. I try to act nice. I try to be friendly. And you know what? I think it comes back to me a lot. But it's not magical or anything like that. I think it's just that I tend to project a positive attitude, and that I think that influences not all, but many of the people I interact with. So in that way, yeah, I kind of get good karma back, you know? And the other thing about vegetarianism, I'm not a vegetarian, but I kind of shy away from red meat. I eat a lot of chicken and fish, but I do that just because I like having a lot of protein, and, you know, I lift weights and I exercise a lot, and I think I need it. And I think the human body's evolved to be omnivorous and eat both vegetables and meat and all that stuff. But having said that, there's a lot to be said for a vegetarian diet. There really is. There's a lot to be said for it. So maybe it's something I need to think through. And I think that if it's done thoughtfully, with an eye on science, I think you can really, really do your body well by not eating meat. I think you can. But I'm not there myself. I still like fish and chicken.
Okay, let's go next to our Skype line, Eric in Gainesville, Florida. Go ahead, Eric. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, me again.
Oh, you're back again. Okay.
One more comment, guy.
Sure, okay. Sure.
I think you have a great voice, and I think you should look into the career possibly of mass mind control.
There you go.
Mind control, okay. Well, it pays well. Maybe I should give it a shot, yeah. Okay.
Shannon's in Spartanburg, South Carolina. Hi, Shannon.
Hi, good evening.
Yeah, go ahead.
I'm almost a total skeptic until I turn 17, just like Mr. Guy.
Same thing, huh?
Same thing. Until one evening, I was 17 years old, which is 11 years ago. My mother was married. It was my stepfather. And I was spending the evening down at my step-grandfather's home. And I seen a man in the doorway, and it came to find out his brother had shot himself in the door, and I are cleaning his gun on the bed, and I had the clothes down to a T, but he was wearing his boots, his shoes, his shirt, the gun used, everything. And I'd never known anything about it, all but the fact that he killed himself accidentally.
Well, you're psychic, and some people are, and I'm convinced being psychic is out there. It's telepathy, it's intuitiveness, but I don't think those are things for skeptics, Guy. I think that those are part of the human body, the nature. It's in our consciousness.
Yeah, many experiences like this really get your attention, and I've thought about, what if something happened to me? What if tonight, after I go to bed, I hear a noise in my backyard, I go out there, and there's an alien spaceship that's landed in my backyard. And
says, now do you believe?
Yeah, the little green guy comes out, gives me a hug, then he flies away. And here I'm standing. I've got no photo. They didn't implant anything in me. I didn't get any video footage. I didn't get a piece of the spaceship. I have no evidence.
It's just your word.
All I have is my story. Now, what do I do? Now, the thing is, it would probably be make such an impact on me that I would feel I would just have to tell the world. I'd want to write a book about it. But you know what? I have to be honest, I wouldn't expect people to believe me because it's just a story, and it might frustrate me to death. It might just make me pull my hair out because I want to tell, no, this really happened, believe me. But here's the deal. It's just a story without evidence. It's just a story. You can't separate it from all the others. And as upsetting as that would be to me, I would have to understand why most people would probably reject my story because I don't have evidence. Because when you got these extraordinary things, you've got to have that extraordinary evidence to match it. You know, you've got to have it. And if you don't, it's just going to be frustrating because people are always going to doubt you.
Bruce is in Monterey, California, west of the Rockies. Bruce, it's your turn.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Hi.
George, you've very courageous to take on a skeptic on coast to coast.
I've got to balance it once in a while.
Oh, that's like flipping it upside down. no offense, Guy. I've been a pretty long time listener to Coast to Coast. And when you mentioned earlier, about an hour ago, you said that people just have to deal with the real world. That kind of caught my attention, because to me, what I've been researching the last few years, the real world is the lie. The living in the real world, I mean, if we're talking about, you know, you're making jokes about the Bilderbergs and the Majestic 12, possibly, when you were talking earlier, and just kind of, you know, nonchalantly mentioning that. But, you know, you look at the media in this country, there's, what, five companies that control 85% of the media, of the information, talking about, you know, brainwashing and mind control about what we're told, that they choose the news that we're told. And there's a lot of people out there like the Joanne Richards of the world, their Earth Defense Headquarters, and her husband's stories, Captain Mark Richards, a high-ranking Navy captain, and his father back in the Cold War. And, you know, they've written reports that detail their extraterrestrial experiences with the military, and you can purchase the reports and read them. I mean, there's a whole report on the Dulce massacre and that whole horror show that was going on there. And people want to discount that because it just seems so unbelievable. But that's the trick to me, is that they make it, people, they say, well, it's so unbelievable that you can't believe it.
Let's see, Bruce, that's a good point. And we're at the top of the hour, Guy. I think the biggest thing is people should walk into anything with eyes wide open, not eyes wide shut.
Can I make a five-second comment before we go?
Now it's down to three. Go ahead.
Oh, sorry. Okay. No, I was just going to say, when I referred to the real-world reality, I was talking about what we know versus supernatural paranormal claims. When you talk about people controlling the world, conspiracies and that thing, that doesn't require magic or supernatural or anything. That's more like investigation, criminal investigation or something. So it's sort of a different kind of matter for skepticism.
Guy Harrison, the book, 50 Popular Beliefs That People Think Are True. I shall be back in a moment with you and open lines now on Coast to Coast AM with a special hotline. I'll tell you about it in a second.